Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information that will expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers.
Welcome to the Art of Network Engineering. I am AJ Murray, recovering from a cold, so probably a little congested, but we'll make it through. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing good, AJ. It's starting to get nice outside, so I'm back in the, around the neighborhood.
I don't want to hear it, Dan. I talked to you earlier today, and you told me how nice it is down there.
Yeah, I think it was like, 67 or something, like 76?
Yeah, I think you said it was like 74. Yeah.
74, yeah.
So, yeah. And I was, you know,
what did you say it was 19
degrees here?
It's 25 here right now.
It's 10. It's 10 right now.
It's wonderful.
And that's Fahrenheit for all you know, out
yes,
there.
Yes.
Yeah, we'd be cooking it otherwise.
Right? It's the time of year in New England where, like, one day it's like 40, almost 50, and you're like, oh, spring's coming. And then the next day it's like, you know, -2, and you're like, ah.
Yeah. Tennessee's been that way too. We had snow randomly come through the other day, and it was just like out of nowhere. 2 days before that, it was like 50s and getting up into the 60s a little bit, and then it went down to like 32 or 30 or something like that, and had some snow come through. And I'm just like, in Tennessee, it's a joke, right? Like, we have all four seasons in a week if it, you know, if it comes to it. But it just one of them things.
Gotta love it. Awesome. Let's get to some wins. Don't worry, I have the goat.
Nice.
All right, winning in our Discord channel this week is Ethan. He passed the JNCDA. Congratulations, Ethan. Nice.
Is that like the CCDA equivalent? Or I guess they don't have the DA anymore, but...
Yeah, they don't have the CCDA anymore, but it is basically the same thing. It's Juniper's network design certification.
Gotcha.
Nice.
Yep, that's a good one. Smile and Chris passed the PCNSA. That is the Palo Alto Network Certified Network Security Administrator.
Nice,
congratulations,
dude.
Chris.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been
working on that.
Like, He has. He said he just passed it. Like, he just decided to take the exam. He like had it scheduled, and then he had to move it once, and he was going to move it again. He's like, you know what? Uh-huh. And he just like buckled down the day before, and then he went in the next morning and just knocked it out. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Dion accepted a new job working in a data center. Congratulations, Dion.
Nice.
And
ELIGRP passed the LPI, the Linux Professional Institute, I believe it is, the Linux Essential Certification.
Awesome.
I love this. I don't know if you guys are on Twitter, but there is somebody that I follow. She makes the funniest networking related memes out of like clips from movies. Emirage, I hope I'm saying that right. She just accepted her first job in tech as an entry-level network consultant. And I am so excited to be able to announce this win on here for her. Yes, congratulations.
That is awesome. Yeah. I absolutely love her memes, by the way.
Yes.
The world needs more networking memes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, especially because I have a special place in my heart for Harry Potter, and she makes a lot of Harry Potter memes.
Yeah, she
awesome.
Does.
So,
T-Pal 007 passed the CCNA exam. Congratulations.
Nice. Good job. Woo!
I like this name. Not working engineer. They got a promotion and a huge raise, so they're working pretty hard. So.
Nice.
I guess they're working now.
Yeah, they are. So that's all the wins we have for this week. Welcome to our new Patreons, L Savage, Dan, Jeff, and Christine. Thank you so much for your support of what we do here at the Art of Network Engineering. And
thank you, thank you.
just just a little over a month's time, we are going to be at A1 Live in Asheville. I cannot wait. It's going to be so much fun. Mostly because the five of us are going to be meeting and all in the same room at the same time for the first time. You know, I've met Dan. Dan came up and hung out with me for a little bit. Tim came out and hung out with me last fall. But that's it. And none of us have met any of the others. So just so excited to get everybody in the same room. And we're going to be living together for like 3 days. So I hope we like each other.
And Andy and I are definitely going to wrestle at some point. So don't want to miss out
Pixar
on that.
Pixar didn't happen.
Yeah.
Do I need to pick up like a kiddie pool and some Jello when I get off the plane? Is that what's happening?
No. No.
Not that kind of wrestling?
Definitely not.
So I hope that by the time this episode drops, the registration link will be live. We are going to get it very soon from our sponsor, Open Gear. And we are going to offer it to our Patreons first. So if you want the first shot to register, you can sign up to be a Patreon. And then we'll release it to everybody else. We are hoping to provide 60 slots. If those fill up quickly, we're going to go back to the venue and see how many more people we can squeeze in there. And if they'll let us, you know, bring more people in, we will extend the invite and let more people register. But, you know, when we first threw this out to Twitter and, you know, tried to gauge some interest, like 30 or so people were like, oh, yeah, that'd be cool. I'd go to a live event. But I got to tell you that the Discord has been clamoring for this registration link, and it has me concerned we might fill up registration a little too quickly.
Yeah, they've been starting riots in there. It's getting a little out of hand.
Yeah, I think, you know, now that we're 2 years into, you know, March 2020, people are looking to get out of the house.
Yeah, amen. Exactly.
Amen. I'm ready to get out of the house.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, we are looking forward to A1 Live in Asheville, North Carolina. We will be at Highwire Brewing, and we are going to be there from about 4 p.m. until 7 p.m. We are going to record a episode right there. We'll meet and greet with the fans, hang out, have some beers. We've got some great swag being built right now as we speak. We'll have some stickers and stuff to give away to everybody that attends. And it's going to be a fantastic time. So I hope that you can join us. And there is a link to a page that has more details about the event. And again, as soon as the registration link is available, we will post that to the show notes. We'll post it from our Twitter account. We'll sing it from mountaintops high and, you know, make sure that everybody can get a chance to join us in Asheville. That'll be April 9th from 4 to 7 p.m. And then who knows? We'll probably be an after party somewhere else.
Mm. Most certainly will be an after party. Just awesome. Gotta figure out where.
Everywhere. We're gonna paint the town.
Yeah.
Yeah, you ever hear those flower runs that people used to do? They used to have like groups of people that go out drinking and they would take flour and like throw it on the ground and you had to like follow the path to the bar.
No, I've never heard that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There used to be a group of people like the Burlington Beer Run and they would do all sorts of like antics and stuff like that.
Interesting.
Well, we have a guest this evening, and I am very excited to welcome Heather to the show. Heather, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
We met on Twitter, and I believe the first time I saw a post from you, you had a guitar, maybe?
It's a bass guitar.
Yes, a bass guitar. And then I saw that you're like all about networking too. And I'm like, well, hello. This will be a fun conversation. And we've talked quite a bit on the side. And I'm very excited to get a chance to interview you. So thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of it blew up after, you know, what I will call Twittergate in the networking engineering world.
yes.
And that's kind of where I think everything's like picked up, we'll say.
Right.
No, I think you're right.
A lot of visibility came out of that, right?
A lot of visibility came. I'm surprised how much visibility came out of that, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is like the Twitter algorithm or something, right? But it was not until that event did I find a lot more women in tech and, you know, specifically women in network engineering. So
really.
You know, kind of terrible as that whole event was, it brought about like more visibility. And now I follow a lot more women in network engineering and I enjoy it for one.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that I've been, you know, I've been doing network engineering for 20 years now. So not to date myself here, but
don't worry. Yeah, I'm not going to ask you how old you are.
I'm 41, in case you have to know.
Hey, look, I didn't ask her. She said it.
Mark that down, Andy. I have no qualms about my age. I am what I am. That's what I am.
Andy gives me a hard time because he thinks I ask every woman that comes on here what her age is. And I do not. I have asked two, but.
Yeah. Nope. No, I have no shame about my age. You know, you get older, you don't get younger.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you're 41 and you've been doing network engineer for 20 years, that's basically all you've done.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
That's awesome. Yeah,
no, it's funny how I got into network engineering, actually. So
I can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah.
So I went to school at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, also known as RPI, in upstate New York. It is a lovely hole named Troy. And I was originally intending to be a, you know, programmer, because my degree was computer science. That was what the degree was C++, Java, even like full on C with, you know, your memory allocation fun, all that type of stuff. But my very last year there, they offered a Cisco Academy sponsored course for the full year. So the first semester and second semester, you know, over the both semesters, you would get your CCNP. So
that's not normal, is it?
No, it's not normal. But this was an engineering school, so of course, they had to raise the bar, ceiling, whatever the metaphor is these days. I can't even keep track of it. But so the first semester we did, and back then the CCNA was only one test, and they didn't have the lab simulations back then. Like, this was like 2001 we're talking about, so we're talking like ages ago. They didn't have those fancy, you know, virtual things back then. So it was just a multiple choice test. It was all one thing. But you did the CCNA, and then you did routing in the first semester. So there's CCNA test plus routing. Second semester was switch, remote access, and troubleshoot.
Oh, so there was four.
And that was back when it was four tests.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So back then, the CCMP was four tests. There is routing, there is switching, troubleshooting, and another one about remote access. And that was all about PPP, frame relay, ATM, all the stuff that you don't see much these days, ISDN, things like that.
Wow.
Yeah. So after I did that class, and yes, I was the only female in the entire class the entire year, but I didn't care. My instructor was an amazing guy. I even found him on LinkedIn recently just to say, hey, look, I'm still doing network engineering now later. And he's like, hey, thanks for reaching out. But you know, he was the one that kind of like got me enthusiastic about networking in the first place, because I ended up graduating college, not only with a degree, but with my CCNP ready to go out into the world and, you know, route some packets and, you know, bend them to my will. So, BC RAN is, as Jordan says, I still have that book today. I still have all of my Cisco books. I've even got the, you know, with the routing TCP/IP, you know, the TCP/IP Bible, like volume Bible, one. I don't have volume two. I'll get it at some point, but ancient Cisco, like Cisco press books that I still have today, just because network fundamentals don't change. Yeah. You know, so, they haven't changed much.
So that's true. Like a bachelor's program?
Okay.
All right. I got you.
So it was originally just going to be, you know, as a bachelor's in computer science.
Okay.
And most computer science degrees are programming. So I was doing the C++. I was doing the Java. I was doing that. And I was thinking, okay, I'll go and I'll be a software developer. But found this course, decided I don't want to code. I want into networks. And now here I am, 2022, still doing networks.
Yeah.
Are you coding at all now? Are you doing any dabbling in network automation?
Yes. A lot of Python and Ansible these days.
Nice. I'm about to do some deep diving into Ansible. AJ's kind of showing me some stuff, but I'm working towards, because what I'm wanting to do is kind of do cross-platform stuff, and it seems like Ansible's really good at that. So
Yeah. I think, in the environment that I'm in, so, you know, quick background. I'm a senior network engineer at Wayfair. I've been with Wayfair for almost 6 years now, and I've done everything from their data center to their campus network. And I've gone from campus to data center, and now I'm back on campus. And one of my big focuses right now is our WAN site builds. So a lot, like we have probably about 75 to 80 different sites right now.
Oh, wow.
Very small network stacks, but very widespread. So our WAN is very broad.
Yeah.
But and the environment isn't pure Cisco. It's probably 75% Cisco, but we've got Palo Altos, we've got, you know, Open Gear. We've got use Open Gear very much in our for our out of band. And, you know, in a hybrid environment like that, you can't just use like a Cisco tool to manage everything. You need something agnostic. Yeah. And something like Ansible with a lot of plugins for Cisco, Palo Alto, Arista, Juniper, like anything, even Linux. That's the type of thing that you need in order to automate everything and kind of tie it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now how long have you been doing the Ansible thing?
Only a couple of years, really. Like probably in like the last two, I would say, is becoming need. I feel like in the past, automation hasn't become really prominent in the networking world. Probably only like the last 5 years, I think it's become more of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's all of a sudden like blowing up because you see Cisco now doing, you know, their DevCore exams, a whole like dev heavy, courses. And it's only the last couple of years. Like, it was only a couple of years ago that they just revamped all of their, certificate curriculum and added all of these new development heavy things. It was not that long ago.
Going by.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, time has no meaning anymore.
Feels like it was just yesterday.
You mean it wasn't?
Soon they'll be going off to college. that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm still like kind of blown away by that program, the Networking Academy, where they offered the professional. I've never heard of that. Like, I've heard that they've done stuff like the A+ and the CCNA. But I've never heard them offer professional level courses in the Network Academy. And I think at the college level, I think that's very appropriate. And I think that it's so cool that you got to graduate with a bachelor's and a professional level certification and head on out in the world. That's fantastic. Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, I didn't renew the certification because I was lazy. And I mean, at that point in time, I was doing networking. I was doing the job. Yeah. I didn't really feel the need for the certification because at that point, the certification had gotten my foot in the door.
Right.
And the job experience is kind of what carried me up until now.
Right. Yeah. And unless you're working for a place that wants you to have that, like, it's probably not a need to carry it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a cousin who works for Cisco and he got a CCIE as part of his job because he worked for Cisco. So I can see that being a requirement. Right. If you're working in like some of like the deep, deep, deep levels of like Cisco tech, the higher tier support levels and, super, customer like focus type things, then I would see them wanting a CCIE, somebody who's that deeply involved into the technology. But in my experience, learning trial by fire has been my teacher. Being thrown a problem like, okay, this route isn't going where it's supposed to go. Why? Figure it out. And in one example I had, it turned out to be a weird OSPF thing where I needed to use a 255 metric route in order to force traffic to not go where it wanted to go because that wasn't where I wanted it to go.
Yeah.
So little hacks like that and little real world problems like that, I think are some of the best teachers as far as networking goes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, let's go back. So, you're a senior network engineer today at Wayfair. We know you went to college and you got your NP and you graduated. What was the first job in networking?
I worked at a little financial company in Connecticut. They did just like real time, like financial software, essentially. And this is really old school stuff. Like this is where we had 2600 series routers and ISDN lines. And they're still doing like ATM frame relay type lines, like direct point to point to client sites. So they could like directly connect our data centers and get that real time data. So this is pretty old school stuff. And even like the servers that we had running this stuff was running OpenVMS. And you know how ancient OpenVMS is.
Yeah. I remember those 2600s.
Jordan, CSU, DSU cards. I remember the orange color will stick in my head forever.
Nice.
I remember those 2600s. We had those in my life. So we're not too far apart in age. I'm 38 and I went to college late because I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up.
I still don't want to do what I want to do when I grow up.
And so when I got to Champlain College, it was like, what was it like? 2007, I think I started there. And so we had 2600s in the lab.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Champlain. My younger brother went to Champlain, and he's 37, so you're probably there around the same time.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm.
Did he get go for a degree in networking or IT?
No, he went into digital forensics.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. It's entirely possible we had a class together because I did networking and information security, so I had to take some of the same forensic classes for the security piece of it. So interesting.
Yeah, you probably ran into him at some point.
That's funny.
Small world.
I love it. Very. I love it.
So you're doing some of that. And then, so how long were you there for?
A couple of years. A couple of years. Yeah. So I'm, quick backstory, I'm Massachusetts native, born and raised in Western Mass, Berkshire County. If you drive directly north from there, you'll end up reaching AJ.
I gotcha.
Yep. Yeah, I ended up getting this job was in Connecticut. So I was like, it's a job. They're going to pay me decent money. I'll move to Connecticut. Didn't quite like Connecticut too much. It's a bit too, a little bit too rich for my blood, some people love Connecticut, especially that part. This is like Stamford Greenwich, and Greenwich is like one of the really like fancy places. And I didn't really feel like I fit it because I was just a recent college graduate, and college students are poor. They don't, have like Porsches and BMWs and all these nice cars that you see running around. So it's like, oh, what am I going to do? I'm just this young person among these tons of rich people. I feel out of place. So
nice.
So yeah, I did that for a few years, decided to come back to Massachusetts. It took me a while to find a tech job back in Massachusetts at that point. That was probably like 2004-ish. But yeah, I did tech support for like a small retail shop for a little while. And that was really basic, like Windows support and, fixing the occasional like phone problem, things like that. So I've had my hand in a lot of different IT stuff. Like I've done Windows Server. I've done Exchange, which, I don't tell people at work that I work with about that because then they'll try and get me to fix Exchange. I remember one time where it was one of these, like back when the Pro Alliance were compact before HP bought them. This is this big white, like probably 6U box, it's really, really old looking thing. And it was running Exchange Server. And one day this just died. Completely dead. Did not do anything. By some miracle, I managed to like technomancy resurrect it from the dead and got it to boot up. And that's probably one of my worst/best Exchange stories ever. And after that point, I'm like, I'm going to go back into networking because I don't really feel like dealing with Windows anymore. And it kind of turned me off Windows support for quite some time.
Nice.
Can't imagine why.
So in the first role, I guess I forgot to ask this, but like, were you doing networking for that role or?
Yes. Yeah. That was pure network engineering. That was strictly, setting up client routers and, cause we would set up these Tony 600 routers and send them to client sites. We would provision point to point circuits from our data center to the client site that would then connect to those routers that we owned. And that would give the client a direct line into our data center. So that way our software could pull the financial information from it.
Gotcha. So what I'm hearing is like, as soon as you got out of college, you got a networking job right away, pretty much.
Yes.
I got you. So you didn't, which, you didn't go through
back
like a
in,
help
desk. 2002, 2003 was like, unreal. I never had to, I was, knock on wood. I was very lucky to never have to go through that kind of help desk-y sort of, grind that so many people have to deal with.
Gotcha. So how long did you do the Exchange for?
That was actually funny. So after my, after I moved back to Massachusetts, I, ended up moving to Australia for a few years, which is a really long, really long story behind that, which, probably for another day. But when I was over there, I ended up getting a job at like a digital web agency, and they hosted everything that they made. Like they made a content management system, like a CMS, and they hosted it themselves, which I don't know why. This is way before the cloud. This is like 2005, 2006, 2007 era kind of. And they had a couple of racks in a colocation space. Two very, very simple racks, but it was a pretty complicated network setup for what they were. They had dual homes, like Cisco routers running IBGP between them. You know, they peered with their ISPs and they didn't really have anyone who knew that type of stuff. So I was doing networking for them, but I was also doing some of the Windows and, you know, some of the server support, and that exchange from the dead thing happened at that Australian company that I was at.
Wow.
And it was funny because that was like really late at night, because they had an office in Sydney, Australia, where I was living at the time. And they also had an office in London, and they're complete opposite sides of the world. So during their daytime was like middle of the night. And it was the London office that I complained about their email not working for some reason. So, you know, I logged in, saw, oh, crap, the email server's dead, went into the office. And I think I spent about 24 hours straight in the office trying to resurrect this thing, or at least resurrect some sort of email solution so that they could get email. And then I can, you know, eventually, you know, rebuild or, you know, get a new server, something. Like, I don't know how I ended up doing it, but I managed to get like a postfix server going, so that way they could like directly get their email and, you know, use POP3. Oh, yes. And it was like a total MacGyver situation.
Oh, I was about to say, you like were paperclips and bubblegum.
Oh, paperclips and bubblegum. Yeah, no, I often, you know, I use MacGyver all the time in my networking career, because that's kind of how it seems like sometimes. I always end up with the problems that just require that sort of solution.
Yeah.
So we ended up replacing that with a completely brand new server with brand new version of Exchange. And, you know, when I left the company and left Australia, they were in good hands. But I was the only IT person, because only like a 10-20 person office.
You don't have
more than one IT person. Yes. So I mean, I was doing the networking. I was, you know, I was coordinating all the BGP stuff. I was maintaining their firewalls and their switches and whatnot, but I was also doing everything else too.
Yeah. Were you like installing printers and everything too, like that?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Or maybe not installing them, but messing with them.
No, I did the scene from Office Space, and it was vividly in my mind.
So did I hear you right? You say you lived in Australia?
I did, yes.
Oh my gosh, that's cool.
Yeah, I was there for about almost 5 years.
Oh, well, wow.
Let's talk about that. Like,
yeah, that's a major.
I mean, that's such a huge, that's a huge move, right? Like, that's an incredibly long plane flight from New England to Australia.
Yeah, it was 24 hours straight on planes.
Oh, sure. So how did that opportunity come up?
Well, that, I'm not going to get into the details of that, but that stemmed from a now failed relationship.
Gotcha. Okay.
AJ's like, let me close that back up.
Don't worry. My husband knows that story already.
that's so cool. I mean, I just have this personal interest in like Australia. So I think it's so cool that you lived and worked and did network engineering there for 5 years.
In Sydney,
That's awesome.
I highly recommend Australia. Yeah. I loved my time there. It's very expensive. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, you think Boston prices, then you just like bump them up closer to San Francisco, and then we're talking.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's expensive. And it's probably gotten even worse since I've been there. And I've been back here for like 11, 12 years now.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool. So what did you do when you got back?
I stayed with my mom for a while in the Berkshires.
Nice.
And chilled, look for work in Boston.
There you go. Did you land another network engineering job?
It was more of a general IT job.
Yeah.
But very network heavy.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So there were a couple people on the team. It's for a very small like alarm company. And I did a lot of like general IT stuff for them, but very heavy on like the network stuff. They had Beata routers. There were, I'm trying to remember what firewalls they had. I can't even remember. That was so long ago. I think there were a couple of Cisco devices, but most of it was like, you know, just either like the Yada or something else. I cannot remember. Can't remember.
Yeah. So how long did you do that for?
Did that for a couple of years, and then ended up getting a job with Hitachi Data Systems. I think they've renamed themselves now, but I was doing a lot of network stuff for them. With Hitachi, I was there for a couple of years, and they had like my job was maintaining their development lab. So they developed a storage product, like, you know, kind of like a big data sort of product. Like, back then. This is like 2010, 11, no, 2012 maybe. you know, we're going back like decades here. So, you know, fuzzy in the brain, you know, old lady brain here.
I understand. I was going to ask you if they were making drills there, because anyway, I like Hitachi drills. They're their tools, yeah. You know.
No, this was a storage product they were working on. And my job was to help maintain the development lab in there.
Okay.
And so that was where I had one of my most fun experiences with Cat OS. Oh. They still had a 6500 that ran Cat OS.
Oh, my gosh.
And wow. I'd never touched Cat OS before, you know. Before that, I was only touched like, you know, standard generic iOS, you know. My financial job had some 6500s, and I only logged into maybe once or twice. There's a whole other like team that kind of dealt with some of that core stuff.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
But this, you know, this pair is just like me. And me and this, you know, ungodly behemoth of a 6500 chassis running Cat OS, you know, I had to figure out, you know, oh, I have to use the set keyword everywhere in order to actually do anything.
Okay. Yeah. I've never had to experience Cat OS, but I've heard you're lucky. Yeah. I was going to say, I've heard that that's a good thing that I haven't. So,
yes. It was a good experience because you got to see some of the history, because the 6500, like, is probably one of like the, what's the word I'm thinking of, you know, the quintessential switches of a network engineer's career, especially people who are closer to our age. You know, everyone's probably got a story about a 6500 they've dealt with, you know, that's, you know, still running 15, 20 years later, or hey, this thing's still running Cat OS.
I feel like when you get around some older network engineers, it's kind of like the guy that has the 68, you know, dang it, left me. The Camaro, the 68 Camaro, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, I had that puppy purring, you know.
It's kind of what it feels like sometimes. Yeah. It's funny. It reminds me going back to my, just at a college job, they had a team of people who managed that open VMS cluster. And at the time, you know, I was like 21, 22 years old then, but all of those people maintaining that were, you know, in their mid 40s, you know, early 50s, you know, because open VMS had been around for so long, you know, you needed people with experience in order to maintain that, because the newer folk, we don't know what open VMS is. You know, what is that? New to us. That's funny. Right. And then I think, you know, the old school 6500s are very similar to a network engineer's career.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
We did eventually replace that with a refurbished chassis that did not run Cat OS. The refurbished chassis was called the XE.
Okay.
I don't remember. Sure. 6500. Yeah, I cannot remember, but there's like a refurbished one that used the Supervisor 720 modules.
Okay.
Instead of the like the old school Supervisor 2s that the older 6500s used. Those strictly iOS. You know, there is no Cat OS involved. It was just, you know, like the layer 3 switches that you see today.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's much, much more sane. Same piece of equipment. But even then, you know, the 6500 series was like, you know, end of sale, you know, barely like supported for like another year or two. Yeah.
Gotta love them.
Oh man. Yeah, they make good side tables, I hear.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of people in Discord that talk about that.
I eventually want to turn that 4500 into something like that. like a little mini fridge or,
you know. You probably make that into something really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what.
That'd be cool.
A keg.
It's a little bit too big to be a paperweight, I think.
Yeah. AJ, can I put a mini keg in there?
One of those
small kegs.
Sure. Yeah, like the log. Yeah.
Yeah.
Side table with a lot of drawers. Nice.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Oh, man. It looks like we're getting a whole bunch of people here now.
Yeah.
Nice. Welcome.
Picking up.
But yeah. No, that was fun just to be able to experience Cat OS. And even then, we had, back then we had PIX firewalls. This was bright as ASAs were coming out.
Yeah.
And
I got to play with those.
Yeah, they were fun.
Yeah, I had some PIX firewalls when I first started where I'm at. Definitely, we migrated over the ASAs. Now we're at Palos, but
I remember back then. So one time, I think it was just right around the time where they redid the PIX OS to. They totally redid the way they did NAT. So the NAT configuration in one version didn't port to the version up. So it was, I think, version 8.2 to version 8.3. They completely redid the way the NAT configuration was. Mm-hmm. So if you couldn't copy and paste an older Pix config and put it into the new OS, like the NAT just was like, nope, configuration error. So you wouldn't have your NAT. You had to redo it all manually. And there wasn't an easy way to get your NAT configuration into the new format.
Yeah, you want to know how I learned that? I learned that the hard way because we had a consultant come in and do that migration for us. Hmm. And he left the day. So we installed him one night, and this was over the weekend. And then he left that weekend and went back to where he came from. And he was like, you got it, man. Don't worry. And the following Monday, everything just nothing was working properly. And I called up Cisco Tech, and the guy's name was Nitesh. I'll never forget that dude's name because he was the coolest tech engineer I've ever had on the phone before. And that guy just, he was on the phone with me for like 9 hours straight.
Oh my gosh.
Basically a problem would come in and I'd be like, all right, here's source destination. Here's what they're trying to do. You know, they need to be added to this or whatever. And he was along the way, he was pretty much showing me how the new NAT worked on there. He was sharing documentation with me, and that was a very rough way to learn it, but I figured it out after that. that's for sure.
Yeah, that was definitely a trial by fire sort of thing. I think we tried at that job. This is when I was at Hitachi, that we tried multiple times to upgrade to that new version, but we just didn't bother. And I ended up leaving there before they either ripped and replaced it or upgraded.
Yeah.
I don't remember what happened there.
Well, but man, that was a
probably a good thing. Yeah. Because yeah, definitely.
Oh my gosh.
Hey y'all, it's Lexi, aka Track It Piecer, or as my most recent burner account hater described me, quote, she can't configure a switch for shit. I'm really sorry to interrupt you in the middle of the podcast, but I have a cool story to tell you, and it'll only take a minute, and then we'll get back to the show, okay? So I come from a NOC background. I started out in a NOC. And the most annoying thing that would happen back then is when a user would come in complaining about a problem, blaming the network, but our network monitoring system was showing zero signs that anything was wrong. And suspend your disbelief for just a moment, and we're assuming that the network actually is at fault, okay? Sadly, most network monitoring software really only pings devices and shows you utilization on maybe a few interfaces, but overall this doesn't really help us in the end. What if you knew everything that your network equipment knows? Like everything. Path Solutions actually has a product that does this, and it's called TotalView. It provides automated root cause troubleshooting of the entire network. I'm talking monitoring every interface on every switch, router, gateway, and firewall. It also goes deep, collecting performance data, 19 different error counters, QoS, CDP, LLDP, and PoE on every interface, the whole kit and caboodle. TotalView is also smart. It has a built-in heuristics engine that analyzes the information to provide you, the user, with plain English root cause resolutions to problems that other NMS systems really wouldn't even be aware of. You're responsible for the entire network, right? So shouldn't you have visibility that matches your responsibility? Visit PathSolutions.com today to learn more about TotalView and get total network visibility on your network. Now back to the show.
What's next? Where do we go after that?
Verizon.
Ooh. Oh, you're for a provider?
Yeah, well, I was actually working for the Terramark division. So they were making the short answer is they were trying to make a cloud product that rivaled Amazon and Google and whatnot. Yeah. And short story, you know, TLDR, it failed miserably.
But I've never heard of that. So.
The Verizon Cloud is a very short-lived sort of thing. There are two sides of it. There's compute cloud and there's storage cloud. And one of my job was to do the networking for the storage cloud thing. Mm-hmm. That was all Aristas, which was actually kind of fun because I'd never touched Aristas before. And I can see why Cisco ended up, you know, in some litigation with them because of the config similarities.
Nice.
Yeah, but no, they were actually a decent, fun bit of hardware to play with, you know, something a little bit different, you know, because I, up until then, I had always just been Cisco, because that's what I knew. And that's where, you know, what everyone had where I went. So getting to play with something a little bit different was actually a lot of fun. And they actually had their edge routers were actually Junipers, and I didn't get to play with them too much, but I did get to tinker with them a little bit. And that was my sole experience touching anything Juniper related.
Did you like it?
It was cool. Yeah. From what I can remember. Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that stood out to me at the time was the fact that you can make a configuration change, have it not come into effect until you commit it. Cisco did not have that capability.
Right. Yeah.
I don't even know if they still have, I don't even know if they had that capability now.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah, I don't think
But yeah, like they were one of the first, you know, network vendors that I've even heard of that had that capability in it. And I was like, you know what? That could save so many outages. You know, how many people would fat finger, you know, like, you know, a route or, you know, mistype a subnet or mistype a net mask or, you know, mistype the next hop or a route metric or something, you know, mistype the BGP AS number things. You know, you want to have that level of safety because we're humans and we're not perfect. We're gonna screw things up.
Yeah, because if you're not Andy, you know, just copy and pasting out of your notebook. I do that too, though. you know, you can definitely potential for error to fat, like you said, fat finger something.
Oh, so absolutely.
you can put your config in and then kind of review it, and then once you feel safe after that point, then you know, pull the trigger on it. But I like that because, you know, Palo Alto's do the same thing. And so I like that. But I will tell you, I was so used to like Cisco, as soon as I click something and it applies it, that there's been a few times where I've made a change, told a developer like, hey, try it now, I think it'll work, you know. And then they're like, no, it's still not working. I'm like, what are you talking? Oh, I forgot to hit commit. It's been me that way too. So
definitely. Absolutely. Now we use Palo Alto at my current job. And I think I ran into that a few times because you're so used to the instant nature of, you know, doing something in a Cisco. Like, it can be a blessing and it can be an absolute curse if you make the wrong configuration change.
Right.
But no, like that Arista was a lot of fun to tinker with. But and after I was with Verizon for a good couple of years, and then, you know, after the product do so well, you know, a lot of people were laid off, and I decided, you know what, I'm gonna try and look for something else. And that's how I ended up at Wayfair, where I'm still at now, almost 6 years later.
Very cool. Yeah.
And so, you said, oh, sorry, go ahead, AJ.
No, I you know, I don't think we've had a lot of guests that have been doing network engineering as long as you have, like right out of college, all the way up through, you know, so I want to pick your brain on what kind of qualities do you think a person has to possess to successfully do this for a lifetime?
Tenacity. Like you've got to have, and especially, you know, I'm sure we could get into this later, but especially as a woman in network engineering, like, you've got to have some thick skin. You've got to know that you're going to come up against some hardships, that, you know, the world changes, the networking tech changes, and business needs to be like, oh, hey, there's this new fancy technology that I heard some buzzwords about on the internet the other day. We're going to use it and make it happen. You're like, what? you've got to somehow make that happen. So you've got to have that, the resiliency. You've got to have the tenacity to just, you know, keep up with it, because otherwise it can seem really, really overwhelming.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like, especially in recent years, the pace at which stuff is changing and coming out is just incredible.
It's like, insane. Yeah. Like, I think I have 10 times more gray hairs now than I did like a year ago, just because of, you know, all the things that are changing.
Yeah, it gets overwhelming of like how much stuff you have to figure out, like, in a short period of time, right? Or you start feeling like you're behind, like you're not as valuable as maybe the next engineer type thing.
Right. Like, look at Kubernetes, for example. There's a whole networking layer underneath that entire implementation that seems like, you know, voodoo to most old school network engineers. And even a lot of it is just a bit over my head, like that, because I haven't touched it much. But it's, there's still a lot of, there's networking everywhere now. Mm-hmm. You know, look at SD-WAN, you know, look at Cisco ACI. Look at, you know, anything with, like, you know, VXLAN, any kind of, like, you know, the overlay, the underlay, you know, right. That's where the technology is going. And I think that's what's generating the demand for the automation, for, you know, the need to be able to configure this stuff, because the technology is getting so much more complex.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a lot different now than it was, you know, 20 years ago when it was just like, oh, hey, here's some EIGRP, you know, configure the route, you know, advertise some networks. Here's a bunch of statics you're redistributing, you know, go to town. There's a lot more now.
Yeah.
Well, than there was back then.
I think something else to add to that, too, with the whole automation is, you know, back in the day. And when I say back in the day, I'm talking about, like, you know, think of, like, in the 90s and then getting into the early 2000s, you know, when you booted your computer up and it took 5 to 10 minutes for the thing to even come on, you know, people would go get their coffee, they'd chit chat, and then they get back and their computer would be warmed up and ready to roll. Well, obviously, you know, now that's not the case. Computers boot within like 20 seconds, if that. But I think the same thing is starting to happen in like the data center side, or, well, not just the data center, but the network side altogether, right? Because what's the buzzword? Time to market, right?
Yeah.
Like when someone needs an application built, well, instead of it taking, you know, a couple months to get, you know, whatever, all the nuts and bolts ready for this, now they want it to be spun up instantly, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so now we have to figure out, how do we make all this configuration that took hours and hours to do and make it happen in a click of a button, or, you know, running a script kind of thing. And so it's just the demand of how quick everybody wants everything is just, I don't know, it's blowing that through the roof.
Yeah. And especially with the supply chain shortages that we've been having, like, I don't know if you guys have been feeling it, but like the, supply chain shortages. No, but they're like 8, 9, 10 month lead times to get new gear now. And, you know, at the rate that, you know, we've expanded. So just to get to backtrack just a couple of years, like, I joined Wayfair in 2016. Mm-hmm. Back then, there were only about like 5,000 people total in the company.
Oh,
and
wow.
Now there's over 20,000.
So you doubled down a few times.
Oh my gosh. Had that you know, hyper growth that some companies get. And I don't know if you've ever been at a company that's had that level of hyper growth, but it's insane to keep up with.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's still happening now. Like, things kind of were calm the first bit of the pandemic, and it's actually kind of good for us because a lot of people working from home now, and hey, they need furniture, they need computers, they need desks, they need chairs to sit in. You know, they're going to be home like 24/7. You know, I want my home to be good, so hey, we're going to do all of this business, and so we did all of this business, and a lot of expansion happened because of it. And, you know, me being on the campus networking side, you know, it's my job to get all of these networks for all of these new buildings, you know, warehouses, call centers, engineering offices and whatnot. You know, it's my job to get them up and running, make sure they have the right network gear, make sure they have the ISP, you know, I have weekly calls with our ISP providers and making sure that all, like, you know, the dozens of circuits that we have on order are there, you know, make sure the redundancy works, make sure the IP SLAs work, know the failover, and trying to do that for like a dozen sites at a time is just
wow.
Again, it gives you gray hairs.
Yeah. My goodness,
it's insane. Yeah, and then I think, yeah, like I said, the supply chain shortages are just exacerbating that.
Oh yeah,
people and people understand that there's supply chain shortages, but they still want things now.
Oh yeah,
and that's hard to keep up with sometimes.
That mentality never goes away.
The mentality never goes away. You know, even if you can't get things now, it's like, but how do we get this thing now?
But yeah, I've been getting it for so quickly, so long, and now you're telling me I have to wait like 9 months or 10 months.
It's
a one direction. It's a one direction only, right? Like,
exactly.
You know, if it was slower back then, it only, hey, let's get a little faster. All right, let's get a little faster. We want it a little bit sooner, a little bit sooner. There ain't no going right. back, though. People aren't going to have it.
like, no, there is no going back.
They'll pay like $30 for something for it to be next day, you know?
Exactly. You know, and that's where my coffee habit came from. So no, actually my husband got me into coffee. Before I met him, I didn't drink a lot of coffee. I was very much a tea person, but
okay.
He got me into coffee, and now, you know, almost 9 years later, I cannot stop drinking coffee, and I will never stop drinking coffee. Like, it is a necessity. It is one of the major food groups
of
my diet, in my opinion.
Yeah, my wife's grandmother is the one who got me into coffee. My parents never drink coffee, and so I never drank coffee growing up. But when we'd stay with her grandparents, she would always have coffee in the morning, and I started drinking it with her. And then now I drink coffee pretty much every morning. So,
God, the first thing that I do when I wake up, make the coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Get you going.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. And big, you know, given how fast everybody wants everything now, you need the coffee to keep up with it. Like, right, there's no way you can keep up with it without, you know, without coffee. At least me personally, I need the coffee to keep going. Otherwise, I'm just not a person. Nice. More of like a potato.
Yeah. Right. So you've mentioned a lot of tech. So I feel like you have touched a lot and continue to work with a lot of different technologies. What's your favorite one to work with?
Oh man, that's a hard question. See, I'm very much like, I'm not a, you know, Cisco person or a Juniper person. I am just a learn all of the tech person. Like, so I like to say that one of my hobbies is collecting hobbies. So I'm very much the same way with technology. I like to learn everything. I don't know if I have a favorite. I have things that I'm the best with, and that would be Cisco, because that's what I've been doing with the longest.
Sure.
But I enjoy dabbling into automation and learning, like, oh, hey, let's do some Juniper. Oh, hey, let's do some firewalls and security stuff for a little while. Dive into the Linux world. You know, there's networking going on at that layer too. Mm-hmm. Have you ever looked at an IP tables configuration? You know, how's that working? That's just a firewall, and, you know, in a weird text format sort of way. Yeah. But I mean, like, route switch and, you know, Cisco stuff is like my core. It's like my bread and butter. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say it's my favorite. It's just, you know, what I know the best. I enjoy learning everything. I'm like an information sponge. You know, if there's something new and shiny out there, it's like, ooh, what's that? Squirrel.
Right. Well, do you have like an approach? Like, you know, when you're faced with the new technology, like, is there like go-tos? Like, do you hit like Network Field Day first? Do you, you know, surf on YouTube for information about it? Like, how do you go about tackling something new that you have to learn?
I usually start by going to the vendor themselves, you know, look at their white papers, you know, see what it is they have to say about the product, and then kind of spawn from there. You know, if they, like, a lot of people will say, hey, you know, these companies use my product, so I'll, you know, read through that. A lot of times they have case studies and say, hey, this is how we've used this product to, you know, fix whatever problem we were having, you know. And, you know, tech blogs, yeah, I don't read a whole lot of them these days. Like, way back when, I used to be a big Slashdot reader. These days it's more Ars Technica, because has been around for quite a while, and they've got stuff about like everything.
Yeah.
So very, very much, you know, an Ars person. Yep. But most of it's just, you know, Google foo, you know, see how deep the rabbit hole goes, and eventually you end up on Stack Overflow.
Yeah. Right. Google foo. I like that.
So, I mean, I would imagine in a company that large, you guys probably get some decent buying power, right? So if you start to have a conversation with a vendor about potentially going after a technology, are they quick to like, oh, we'll build a POC for you or throw you some gear to play with?
Usually. We've got our Cisco team, we've got, you know, our Palo Alto team, we've got our we use Aruba for wireless, so we've got our Aruba team. Yep. And just to give you a scope on our wireless, you know, tangent. Oh. But a lot of, like, we, you know, being a, you know, a furniture retailer, we have warehouses full of the stuff that we sell.
Oh, sure.
And these buildings aren't small. They're like million square foot behemoths.
Mm. Whoa.
And so one of our jobs is to make sure that every square inch of that million square feet has wireless signal. because the people who are picking the orders and whatnot have wireless RF guns mm-hmm. to scan the packages, you know, make sure they're for the order that they're picking for, put them on, you know, the conveyor belt for sorting and whatnot. And it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of access points. And one of the struggles there is the metal shelving that they use yep. to store the products to begin with, because the signal, the Wi-Fi signal, will just bounce off of that if it's yep. placed in the wrong space. And one of my favorite quote unquote things is when they decide, oh, hey, we need to move a shelf somewhere. And then the next day, oh, hey, I'm not getting a wireless signal in this part mm-hmm. of the building. And, you know, they don't tell us that they moved the shelves.
Yeah. They don't think about you guys, right?
No, they don't. They don't. No, nobody yet. No, but who thinks about the network people?
Yeah,
really.
So I worked with a consultant one time who he was his specialty was wireless, and I was asking him some of the weirdest issues he's seen, and he brought up a similar situation like that where it was for an automotive company, right? But it was their factory side, I guess. I guess it was where they manufacture parts to sell for, like, you know, repairs and replacements and stuff. But anyways, he said the exact same thing. They had to redo the wireless design because I think the company occupied this space. And so then they started putting in their own shelving and everything like that, but they left the wireless grid basically the same. Right.
Oh,
and
no.
When they did that, all those shelvings, the shelving units were messing it all up. Right. And, yeah. And so he had to get there and, like, I guess line it down the middle of the aisle or something like that, wherever they were going to be at with, I think they were using like forklifts with some kind of computer yep. on them, but,
yeah. And I mean, the ceilings in these places, they're like 40 feet high. So if you, yeah, and if you, exactly. and we mount, you mount the APs in the ceiling. So if you need to get up there, you need to get a foot, like a lift. Take yeah. that lift over to the, you know, drive it over, you know, to the right spot, you know, and hopefully you get on the right IDF cabinet. Raise yourself 30 feet, 40 feet up in the air, and you'll figure out what's going on. And it's...
I don't do heights, so that doesn't sound fun to me. I get a little freaked out when I'm on like a 12-foot ladder. So
I'm with you, Dan. I am not a heights guy. Even as tall as I am,
I just configure
the
things. I don't actually go up there and do it. And I'm short too. Like, my little T-Rex arms would not reach up there very well at all.
Nice.
Yeah, but no, it's such a thing. And Wi-Fi is such a huge part of retail space.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and this, again, it's something that people don't really think about. You know, you even think of Amazon, think of how big their warehouses are. You know, anything, any place, like Costco, the warehouse, you need Wi-Fi in all of that. And these places are huge, mm-hmm. you know. So I'm very glad, like, tools like Ekahau exist so we can actually do, you know, signal maps and, you know, make sure you're getting the coverage of where you're, you know, everyone there. And that's one of the biggest, you know, parts of my job when I'm building a new site is laying out all the access points. Where are the wireless access points going to be? Where are, like, the key hotspots that people are going to be? In offices, you know, conference rooms, common areas like kitchens, you know, little collaborative areas, things like that. You know, you want to place the access points there.
Where the people
because
are.
That's where the people are going to congregate. Yeah. That's where the signal needs to be the strongest because you're going to have the most concentration of people there. Right. You know, and there's so much to wireless. And I never really dug much into it until I got to Wayfair and became like, hey, wireless is a thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, A1 fans, AJ here for NetAlly. You ever heard of NetAlly? Sure you have. They came from the same group of engineers that brought us network tools from Fluke Networks, NetScout, and now they're NetAlly. They know networking. I'm a network engineer for a partner, and when I go to customers and see they use NetAlly, I know it's going to be so much easier to troubleshoot issues we might run into. The name may have changed to NetAlly, but the way they build tools hasn't changed a bit. They ask, what would a network engineer want to help make their job faster and easier? And then they go build it, just like this Etherscope NXG. NetAlly is here to help. NetAlly, simplicity, visibility, collaboration. Visit netally.com today. Now back to the show.
So let me ask you, since we're kind of going down a wireless rabbit hole here, I've been kind of shocked by all the analytics that people are using from wireless nowadays. In your warehouse scenarios, are they doing anything like that? Like, with the analytics of the, like, what they're, and and I don't know it in full depth, right? But it's, they're basically like figuring out where certain clients are, where the concentration of clients are, like in a retail setting, right? Like if you have, you know, a hotspot in a certain, in a store, well, that's where they're, you know, the store might want to put their ads at, right? Like in that, in that hotspot where the most people are going to see it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like, what is it? Bluetooth beaconing that they're doing now and stuff.
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, most of the wireless products that we use, like, so we used to use Aerohive for a while and now we're using Aruba, but there's a central Aruba management that will actually tell you all the access points, how many clients are connected to them, what their IPs, their MAC addresses are, you know, what signal quality they're getting to each and every one of those clients. So that way you can see at a glance, all right, is there a concentration of people in this one particular area? Are they saturating that access point? Do we need to make it more robust? Is the signal lock good enough? You know, is the signal lock good enough somewhere else where a whole bunch of people are? Things like that. Because you can tune the, you could tune the access point, you know, broadcast the signal stronger from, you know, one area or weaker in another area, because you do get, you know, interference from time to time. So it's a whole, like, I don't know, like just invisible air wireless network thing, you know, it's like packets over air.
Yeah. It's all happening. You just can't see it.
Exactly.
I told my dad one time, cause he was like, he's kind of old school and he's like, I don't know what you do. And I'm not really good at explaining to him what I do, but I told him one time, I was like, Dad, I actually, if you think about it, I don't really do much of anything in the sense of like physical, right? Like, you know, like, you know, if you're a construction worker, right, and you go build a house or build a deck or build whatever, you know, they're
at like the end manual of it, labor.
Yeah. It's like you can see like, ta-da, this is what I did, right? And I was showing him like, or I was telling him a lot of what I'm doing is just data, right?
Yeah.
And so it's zeros and ones and I configure this, I configure that, but you don't really see what I do.
Exactly.
he told me, he goes, Daniel, I don't think I'd tell people that.
I know. It's literally like IP over oxygen in the case of wireless.
Yeah. Right. So
I know. It's insane. I think that's, you know, that's actually a good point. You know, that's one of the things that I think some network engineers struggle with, is that the things that they do aren't necessarily as tangible as somebody who does a manual labor, like building a house or building a car.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have that physical product that they can see after it's finished and say, hey, I did that. In my case, because I'm building offices and office networks, there's a little bit of that. Most of the time, I don't even go to these places. I do everything remotely. You know, we've got open gears, we've got SIM cards, you know, to do every kind of config that I need to do. You know, we're working with ISPs on the phone, turning things up. You know, I generally don't see these places, but you do get to see the whole stack come up, you know, the whole site come online, know that, hey, the routing that you added for this network worked, you know, the configurations that you put on these devices worked. So it's not as, you know, tangible as like a manual labor, but, you know, I do think that's something that tech workers in general probably struggle with sometimes, because they do just work with ones and zeros. Right. You know, it's not like tangible things.
Right. I mean, you know, you add an access list into something and it's like, well, what did you do? You know, like, it's like, where, you know, where did the work go?
Yeah. It's like you made something work. It's like, wait a minute, how did I make that work? I just pushed my little clickety clackety keyboard thing and did some magic and boom, all of a sudden traffic works again.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes it does feel like voodoo.
It's like, hold on a second, let me show you how it works. Click it, and people are now arguing about, my internet's not working, you know? All right, let me fix that for you.
It's the network.
So, Heather,
it's
I'm curious.
It's either the network or it's DNS. Mm, go ahead.
I'm curious. It sounds like Wayfair is a really big company. How many other people do network engineering there? Is it just you?
Oh, no. We've got probably a dozen.
Oh, wow. Oh,
nice. That's pretty a big team, networking then. Team.
Yeah, well, some of them are on the data center side and some of them are on the campus side. There's kind of a split between that. Like the data center is the production environment, so the website, you know, keep the website up and running. And a lot of that's cloud-based now. Mm-hmm. And then there's the corporate side, which is the offices, you know the people support type of network. So they kind of make a distinction between that. But I've done both sides of it, and I can see that, like, there is a point where those two meet. So, I mean, you need your corporate offices to reach the website, you know, you need your VPN users to reach your internal tools and services. So there's definitely overlap in where those two meet. And I think having touched both sides of the house, you know, has given me some good insight into how that whole ecosystem works.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a preference? Do you like the campus stuff more than the data center stuff, or?
If I have a preference, they just have different challenges.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a good way to put it.
I mean, I think with like the campus stuff, it's a very templated setup because we have different, like, we have different templates for different types of offices that we're spinning up. So you have like your giant warehouses, you have your really small, like, last mile that don't actually store product, but like, you know, the trucks for it, you know, to do the last mile deliveries, you know, get the products and load it. And you've got call centers where you have a lot of people. So voice traffic, very important. You know, you need to make sure that the internet's a lot more stable and more direct and, you know, not so, you know, laggy. So that means, because, you know, a lot of voice traffic, they're taking calls. If, you know, if customer service can't take calls, that means we can't make money.
Right.
And the data center side of things is also, it's more compact, but it's also a lot more complex with the traffic rules. Like, there are lines and lines and lines of policy routes in some of in our data center switches. They make my head spin every time I look at them.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
Yeah. Clickety clacky with my favorite keyboard switch. Oh, I mean, I'm a Cherry MX fan. You know, Cherries are the gold standard.
There you go. So you mentioned it before. I definitely want to come back to it. With regards to being a female in network engineering, I guess I would ask you, like, what would you say to a female today considering getting into networking?
I would say, do it.
Yeah.
We need more people who are not afraid to stand up to the status quo and just go out there and be bold and be themselves and say, hey, I'm doing this because I love it. I know I'm not one of many who do it. You know, to answer the question in the chat, you know, I am the only network engineer female. And I have been that at every company that I've ever worked at.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I've never ever worked with another female network engineer, which is unfortunate, but it's very, very common. But again, it goes back to what I said earlier about having thick skin. Like, A, you need to be really passionate about the technology. You need to love networking. You need to know that, like, this is what I want to do. I enjoy doing this. I love connecting data and making things just work. And you have to keep learning, and you have to be able to defend yourself and say, hey, no, this is wrong, or this is right, or, you know, this is why, you know, just having, it's hard sometimes. Like, I'm not going to lie. There have been times in my career where, like, especially early on, where I've been bullied for absolutely no reason because they didn't think I was a real network engineer, you know, because I came out of college with my NP and, like, oh, you're just one on paper. You don't know what you're doing. And
oh my gosh.
As a brand new network engineer, that's hard to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, you're just trying to get into the field. You know, you don't want people who are trying to tell you, no, don't do that. And it's turned me off a lot. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, back then, it almost turned me off network engineering altogether, but decided, you know what? I love doing this too much. This is the tech that I want to work with. This is what I've made my career out of. Why would I turn back now?
Yeah.
You know, I question if those people are really even good engineers in a sense, because the people that I've come across that are very caring and very, you know, wanting people to succeed and everything like that, especially the community that we have, it's just, I feel like those people are two different people, right? You got the engineers that want to do the pissing contest and that kind of thing. I don't know. I question why people would even be that way.
I think you're touching upon a good point there. It's a lot of it probably in my mind has to do with insecurity. You know, they don't feel like they're good enough, so they have to project their insecurity onto someone else.
Mm-hmm. And
who easier to project onto than a woman who is, you know, a minority in the network engineering space, you know? Yeah, because, you know, oh, they're different, you know, it's probably them, you know, it's not me, it's somebody else, you know. A lot of people it's hard to come to terms with your own insecurities. You know, I was even like that for a long time, but you know, now, you know, 20 years into it, I'm more than happy to admit when I'm wrong, more than happy to admit that when I don't know something and I need to Google it, you know, more than happy to ask somebody else for help, because in the end, we're all in this to learn networking and do our jobs and enjoy the process. Like, what's the point of putting someone down? What's the point of turning someone off a career? You know, somebody who could be a very valuable member of the networking community.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we need more people. We need happier people. We need more women. We need more minorities. You know, bring them in.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, oh my God.
And,
I love it.
And it's up to everyone to make that community welcome.
Yeah, correct. And that's one thing, like, I want to brag about our community is, they do a really good or really awesome job about, you know, trying to include everybody and, whatnot. I actually right now, this is kind of a twist, but, we have a troll in our Discord, and it's funny because we kind of have like a staff section, right? And I've been giving them a hard time. I've been telling them, y'all are way nicer than I am, because I would have already banned that person. but they won't do. They're like, all right, we're going to give them another try. Right. You know? And,
Yeah, and I know. No, I mean, that's one of the things that when I, because I joined again after Twittergate happened. And that's one of the first things that I noticed about this Discord community was just how welcoming everyone was and how engaging everyone was and supportive. And it's nice and refreshing to have a space like that. And even the Twitter community, after that whole thing happened, everyone just, you know, brought up women engineers. They brought up minority engineers saying, hey, look, there's so many cool people out there who do network engineering. We're not all asshats. Go talk to these people. You know, there's so many good people out there. And so I mean, it's actually kind of surprised me at just how positive like the Twitter network engineering community is. And again, here in this, you know, art and network engineering in general, it's good to see spaces like this happening. You know, I wish I'd had something like this when I was just starting out as a network engineer. So I figure if I couldn't have that back then, make that community happen now for the future engineers. So that way we can get more people in there. So that way when you do get the occasional bully, they'll be shot down immediately for, you know, again, being an asshat, because we don't need more of those people.
No, nope.
Right.
Absolutely not.
Well, and you're super active in our Discord, so we appreciate that. So
it's a great, like I said, it's a great place. It's a very engaging, and it's actually kind of got me, it's keeping me going in, you know, staying into networking, staying up in the new technologies, you know, because again, you know, it's funny, like when you're younger, you're so gung-ho about learning all the cool new tech and having home labs and, you know, doing everything you can to learn about tech to do good at your job. But as time goes on, you realize, you know what, my home life is very precious. I'm going to go and do something else now. It's good to just, you know, have a place that I can hang out like this during the day to keep up with the tech, you know, to have that enthusiasm, but yet still be able to go away at the end of my work day and say, all right, I'm going to go rock out on my bass guitar for a little while.
There you go. Nice.
I love your Discord screen name, by the way.
Yes.
I had to look that up. Or no, wait, AJ, you told me what that was.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't understand it. And AJ was like, let me tell you.
It comes from the Bastard Operator from Hell, which is a blog series on the UK's The Register that was out in, like, you know, the late 90s and early 2000s. And it was all about disgruntled systems admin and his PFY, pimply face youth, you know, junior engineer, and the shenanigans that they would get up to as systems admins. And I was hooked from day one. So I've just kind of made that my moniker everywhere.
Nice.
Yep. That's awesome. I
appreciate it after AJ explained it to me.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's known enough in the community, but it's just obscure enough where I still get joy out of someone saying, hey, I recognize where that's from.
Nice.
Oh, that's great. Oh my gosh, Heather, I cannot believe how quickly this time has flown by.
I know.
This is crazy. Are there any questions that we didn't ask you that we should have asked you? Is there anything you're dying to tell us?
I don't even know. I really can't think of anything right now. Well, I think we've talked about everything there is to talk about. Yeah.
This has been great. I hope you've been watching the chat. I think you have a new friend in Jordan.
Yeah.
We can commiserate about warehouse wireless probably for days, months on end.
If you want to join our Patreon chat, you can go to patreon.com/artofneteng and you can hang out with us as we record these episodes every Thursday night. And we do occasionally record them on other nights of the week depending on guest availability, but we're always doing some fun stuff in here and it's always a good time. Heather, where can people find you? Where can we follow you?
You can find me on Twitter at BoffGirl, BoffGirl, and that's pretty much my handle everywhere you're going to go, Instagram, Twitter, whatnot. So you can find me there.
Awesome. Heather, thank you so much for joining us. We'll put links to all of her stuff in the show notes and make sure you join our Discord so you can chat with her more.
Well, thank you very much for having me. This was a fantastic time.
Awesome. All right. We will see you next week on another episode of the Art of Network Engineering podcast.
Hey, everyone. This is Andy. If you like what you heard today, then please subscribe to our podcast in your favorite podcatcher. Click that bell icon to get notified of all of our future episodes. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Art of NetEng. That's Art of NetEng. You can also find us on the web at artofnetworkengineering.com, where we post all of our show notes, blog articles, and general networking nerdery. You can also see our pretty faces on our YouTube channel named The Art of Network Engineering. Thanks for listening.